everyone, and welcome to our podcast this Thursday, the 1st of April. I'm your host, David Lennox, and I'd like to welcome with me today our CEO, Angus Geddes. Welcome, Angus.
Good morning, David.
I've just got a few housekeeping matters that I have to go through before we get into our podcast for today. Our discussions today are general in nature. And we are not providing personal advice. If you are seeking such advice, please contact your financial planner or advisor. Also, past performance is no indication of future performance. Well, with that out of the way, it's been a short week, and we would normally, Angus, come together on a Friday, but obviously with Easter Friday tomorrow, it's the 1st of April. And there's really been some interesting, events floating around in the market. And I want to focus in on one that you wrote about this morning in today's daily that you headed up, a different kettle of fish. In today's daily, you talk about the ASX breaching 7,000 and retesting record highs. What are the drivers that you see propelling the ASX 200 to those record highs?
Well, David, look, I think the first point to make is the ASX 200, and this also applies to the FTSE 100. Both of these indices have been in, shall we say, extended ranges from when they made their record highs a number of years ago. So to illustrate that, the FTSE, for example, made a record high above 7,000 way back in 2000, so 21 years ago. And it's had a number of attempts at sort of pushing through that 7,000 level. And I think it's probably fair to say that there's quite a lot of resistance in that 7,000 to 8,000 on the FTSE. The same argument can be made for the ASX 200 when that index peaked in 2007. It has made a record high since then, but like the FTSE, you know, it struggled to maintain that. And of course, last year we had COVID, which sent both of those indices down. The point I want to make is that both of those indexes have spent quite a lot of time trading within quite a big range and a number of years trading within that range. Both of those indices are quite similar to each other in that the banking sector and the resources sector comprise a substantial part of the index. Now, because we're bullish on resources and we see a super cycle in the commodity space with countries around the world upgrading their infrastructure, we had a proposal in the US by the Biden administration this week. They're talking about ramping up another 2.2 to 2.5 trillion in stimulus. Of course, we've had China voraciously consuming commodities. So if we're right in our view that the super cycle in commodities is going to get underway and is underway now, you know, as I speak, then we can expect quite a powerful move in the resources sector, which we've already seen, but we can expect that to continue for some time. So that's going to be a positive driver for both the FTSE and the ASX 200. Secondly, the banking sector, which has been under pressure for the last 10 years and underperformed, that's now beginning to turn around. And we're seeing a major inflection in a lot of the banking stocks around the world, particularly as longer-term interest rates begin to rise. That's going to be quite a strong tailwind for the bank stocks. So if we're right in the outlook for those two sectors, then I think it's probably fair to say that we're going to see the ASX 200 and the FTSE 100 do quite well over the next 1 or 2 years. Now, this could be in contrast to the US market, which, of course, has led stock markets around the world on the upside for the last decade. That stock market, although it has a lot of commodity stocks and a lot of bank stocks, as a proportion of the S&P 500, it's got a much smaller weight. You know, we've seen these high growth technology companies really, I guess, steal a limelight over there. So it's entirely plausible that we see the S&P 500 track sideways for some time perhaps for the rest of this year at a range. Whereas at the same time, we could see the ASX 200 and the FTSE go on to make new highs. So quite bullish on the UK and Australia on a relative basis compared to the S&P 500.
Oh, that's very good. I guess that then begs the question, Angus, if you've certainly got a positive view on the ASX 200, and of course you've just been talking about the FTSE 100 as well, both of them being somewhat different kettles of fish, do you see any dangers in the wings for the ASX and the FTSE 100 in the ASX breaching 7,000?
Look, I don't think... I don't think I see danger per se, simply because the valuations, if you look at that, at what's being extrapolated across the market in Australia and the UK, the valuations are lower, whereas the S&P 500, the price earnings ratio is at 22 times, which is, you know, the top of the cycle. Yes, we're going to get earnings growth coming through, but there's room for the PE ratio of the S&P 500 to come down. So it doesn't mean to say that the US stock market's in for a huge fall. I don't think that at all. And I think that, you know, that's also in a cyclical bull market. But we might see a bit of PE compression, whereas in Australia and the UK, PEs are lower. So if anything, we might see some PE expansion. So to summarise, I think there's less risk in Australia and the UK on a relative basis.
Well, that's good to hear. And let's look to, I guess, the rest of the trading month of April to just see if we can't get through that 7,000 level. Look, Angus, in that same daily that you put out this morning, you mentioned that the month of May, for some reasons, a notoriously weak month. You've had a long career as an investor in the Australian market. Perhaps you could give some light on why this phenomenon has become somewhat of a tradition in the Australian market, please.
Yeah, look, that's a fair question. Statistically, May is one of the weakest months. It's right up there with October. And I think, you know, it's probably got a lot to do with the fact that, you know, investors get back from holidays at Christmas time. You know, they get quite excited about the market and about the prospects. And as we saw this year, you know, the stock market had quite a big run. Typically, earnings season is out of the way. Investors get time to digest all of that information. And, you know, in the past, you know, it's been typically marked by quite a lot of selling. Last year, of course, we saw the exact opposite. May was one of the strongest months on record. But, of course, that followed the COVID crash, which occurred in March. And of course, you know, that was probably one of the worst months we've seen in the history of markets. So that relationship was turned on its head last year. I think this time there's just a lot of good news baked into particularly the US market. There's a lot of expectation. So companies are really going to have to deliver quite a lot on the earnings front when they start to report in April and May. And I think that the bar is quite high this year. Historically, it's been quite low, but this year it's quite high. And I think, you know, there's a good chance that we'll see that May effect come through, you know, and we could see a bit of weakness offshore in the US.
Certainly then, Angus, if we do see that weakness, or you're perhaps starting to perceive that there's going to be weakness through the month of May, how would you set the portfolios over the remainder of April so that they can withstand perhaps a somewhat of a correction in the markets through May? If we do see the traditional May collapse or the May correction happening, please?
So to answer that point directly, I think, you know, if we do get a good run in April, I would be using that as an opportunity to lighten portfolios, trim positions that you're not particularly enamored with, stocks that have run hard. You know, it's always good to bank a few profits and maybe just build up a little bit of cash. For those investors that use leverage, I'd be trimming that right back. Reducing leverage and getting yourself into a decent position. So if we did see a bit of selling come through in May, you know, you've got resources and plenty of liquidity to take advantage of that.
Oh, that's very good. So certainly, I guess you'll be watching out for the clues and the indications from the market that we're going to see that happening. Well, we've very rarely focused on Australia in the few podcasts that we've done, and it's really good just to get your perspective on where the ASX 200 is going, given I guess that it's our home base. But look, one of the really big talking points this week, and again, we'll now focus on overseas. One of the really big talking points has been what happened in terms of the collapse of the hedge fund manager Archgo. Could you please tell us? And in Tuesday's daily, you headed it up, margin calls. Could you perhaps just give us a brief explanation of what happened, please?
So the Archegos hedge fund really came unstuck. They were running a lot of leverage, and obviously some of the stocks in their portfolio had a bit of a bad run and were knocked around in late February and in March when technology stocks sold down. And I think they got caught up in that. And because their leverage was significant, that triggered some margin calls. And the margin calls meant that the banks were able to seize some of those stocks in their portfolio and sell those out to pay for those margin calls. Because the positions were so significant in size, that caused further falls in the underlying securities, and that just precipitated further margin calls to the point where we had a number of companies, including CBS, Viacom, which is a big media company in the US, lost as much as 30-35%. We were not immune either. We had a bit of exposure to Tencent Music. They reported great numbers, really good numbers, met the market's expectation. The stock mysteriously dropped 30% after reporting. A lot of people were scratching their heads. Then it became apparent last weekend that that was one of the companies caught up in the Archegos sell-off. And yeah, so we did have a little bit of exposure there. We also had a bit of exposure with Nomura. And, you know, I think those companies look quite attractive. I don't see the margin calls faced by that particular hedge fund as being contagious for the rest of the market. But it does go to show what can happen when there's a lot of leverage in the system and there is a bit of a drop in the market. So I suppose this really dovetails back into what we were talking about earlier, David, just about lightening up on positions, reducing any leverage, trimming the portfolio, raising a little bit of liquidity in April. I think that's probably quite a good strategy. If we do get a bit of volatility coming through in May.
Oh, fabulous. Look, you've probably already answered somewhat part of this question that I'm going to fire at you next, and that is, what are the ramifications then for the broader market when we see this? And that leads me to another question, which one has to cast one's mind back to the GFC, when we saw the same sort of thing, but with banks collapsing, not on margin calls. Is this the start of another GFC?
No, the GFC was the bell ringing at the end of a cycle, at the end of a bull market cycle. We had that big bull market in between sort of 2000 and 2007. A lot of excess is built up in the system, and that had, you know, ramifications throughout the financial markets. Wasn't just one or two hedge funds, it was pretty much the entire market. And so the GFC acted as a cleansing event and then set the foundation and the stage for the next cycle, which ran for 12 years and finished last year in March. So because we've had that cleansing event last year, like I don't see another crash happening. I'm always fond of saying that the last place to look for a crash is after there's immediately been one, because they are defining and cleansing events. But that doesn't mean to say that, you know, there won't be other sort of hedge funds out there that have got a bit long in the tooth in terms of leverage, and that could add to the volatility. So I don't see this interrupting the bull market at all. I think that we are in a bull market cycle, and it's going to go for some time yet. Might be a shorter cycle than what we saw between 2008 and 2020, but nevertheless, you know, we are in a new cycle, relatively new cycle, which has got further to run. but there are going to be some bouts of volatility along the way. But I don't see this as a precursor of another event like the GFC anytime soon.
Oh, that's good to hear. The GFC, I guess, instigated a run of stimulatory actions by reserve banks and government. And it would seem as though when we're having a look at what's happened with COVID, it wasn't so much the collapse of perhaps a hedge fund, but it was the introduction of a pandemic. We're on the cusp of seeing what, a $3 to $4 trillion stimulus program coming out of the US. How's that going to certainly benefit the global investment world?
Well, it's going to turbocharge growth. Growth is going to be very strong this year. It's also going to be strong next year. One reason I'm a little bit more sanguine, I guess, on the prospects of the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ is that a lot of that's already been priced in and it's been brought forward. But that doesn't mean to say that those indices can't make new highs later this year. I just think that those US markets have become quite richly priced. And so with that growth coming through, you know, a lot of the companies that make up the US market, they've got a lot of living up to do. So the growth is going to be beneficial, but of course, you know, we are seeing interest rates rise, and it's going to be inflationary in terms of a lot of the money that's been printed. So you know, there are going to be a couple of challenges, you know, for the market ahead because of that growth. We may also see the growth move through the system and then, you know, begin to fall away quite quickly. And that's one of the reasons why I believe this cycle is going to be shorter than the 12-year cycle that we saw between 2008 and 2020.
Well, let's hope that it's not too much shorter, because I guess from an investment perspective, it'd be nice to be riding the wave of, about a 12-year investment cycle. Angus,
I've just got to make this point. I just don't think we're going to have a 12-year bull market cycle like we saw last time. I think it will be shorter. But, you know, the flip side of that is that maybe the downturn when it arrives might be more subdued as well. So we may not have an abrupt end to the cycle as we saw in 2008 and 2020. But look, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, we are bullish on the markets. We think the stock markets are going to go higher. There's certain sectors I think will do better than others. You know, and we've been quite vocal. Greg and I have both been quite vocal in terms of being cautious towards some of those richly priced technology companies. You know, that have big valuations. But you know, there are other areas of the market. You know, we're very bullish on commodities. We like companies such as BHP and Rio, where their valuations, you know, are nowhere near as expensive. So I think, look, good times ahead, but, you know, we've got to be, I think we've also got to be realistic that the markets have had a big run, and some stock markets may do better than others, you know, looking out over the next 12 months.
Again, well, that's certainly good to hear, and I guess you'll be looking for those indicators to suggest when we've reached our nadirs and we're looking for those turning points. My last question that I want to put to you, Angus, and this was a really interesting heading. It was called "Greed is Good," and we've just talked about the collapse of a hedge fund manager. And is that a greed? What exactly did you mean by, I think it was Monday's daily when you headed it up, "Greed is good"?
Look, that really was a comment that related to the 1980s. And I was really talking about the 1980s cycle. And I think, you know, it was quite famously summed up in that movie Wall Street, you know, when Gordon Gekko gave that speech. He was in the middle of a takeover bid and he's telling the shareholders and the board that greed was good. I mean, it was a defining film for a defining decade in terms of the financial markets. And of course, that film came out just before the 87 crash. So it was really in relation to what happened in the 80s. We are seeing a bit of greed emerge today, but it's nowhere near, I don't think, as euphoric and on a scale with what we saw in 2007. we are seeing hallmarks of greed, and you know that's going to impact different pockets of the market in different ways. But I was really trying to draw a comparison to you know what happened in the US in the 80s. And of course, the 1980s was a great bull market. It was a defining bull market. And I was specifically also talking about 1984 when the stock market broke out and ran. And of course, we had three more good years after that. So I think we have got some good times ahead of us. I just think that some stock markets are going to find this year a bit more challenging than others.
Oh, look, thanks very much, Angus. Look, I think we've now probably come to the end of our podcast for today. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in, and I'd like to thank you, Angus, and if you'd just like to give some final words for over Easter, please.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank all of our shareholders, firstly, who supported the SPP. We were very, very encouraged by the response there. Secondly, I just want to wish everyone a very happy but safe Easter. Be careful out there on the roads if you're driving, but also if you're out there cycling, you've got to be careful. It's not just about what you're doing. It's about what everyone else is doing on the roads as well. And look, have a great break. We're looking forward to our publishing break next week to recharge our batteries. And I look forward to joining everyone in a week's time when we get back from our Easter break. Of course, we will always update members if something major happens next week during that break. If something defining happens, I'll be straight back on the laptop typing up a note.
Oh, that's good to hear, and thanks very much, Angus, for your kind insights. Certainly, we've covered a range of topics from greed to stimulatory programs to records, and let's all hope we do stay safe over the Easter period. We are having a break for the next week, so we will be joining you again in a fortnight's time, and we'll be discussing with Angus his views on the markets, how he's seen the week coming, and also perhaps just some little tidbits on where we think things may be going in the future. So everyone, stay safe for Easter, and this is David, your host, signing off on behalf of Angus. Thanks very much, everyone.